Welcome to the 200% Life Podcast, your weekly insights to spiritual growth and business success with Adam Hergenrother and Hallie Warner.
All right. So recently, I think it was actually like this week, we did a poll on Instagram and social about how people go about deciding what their next book is going to be. So the categories were like, is it based on book cover design? Is it based off of the description? Is it based off of the author or a recommendation? And so the overwhelming response was it's based on recommendation from other people, particularly on podcasts. So I figured let's give our listeners some of our favorite books or some of our most recently read books that we think would be great for them to add to their to-be-read list.
So what are yours?
Okay. So
what would be your, I guess,
top book? God, well,
your top book because that question's tough.
Yeah, yeah. I know. I can't pick
it's
one.
Like there's different categories.
Totally.
Right? Maybe you could say, like, what would be like your top business book?
If I could, I think it depends on, it's different one for different seasons.
Variations for this.
Well, for different seasons of your
right,
life.
So what are some books that you highly recommend?
Now some of my like top books that I'm thinking about and been recommending are Come Up for Air by Nick Sonnenberg. That one is amazing in terms of organizational efficiency, operational efficiency. I think it's great for organizing offices, workflows, information management systems. I love it. The other book that I've been, I'm just really big on the book On Our Best Behavior. I know I've talked about that one before, about the women and seven deadly sins and the history. It's just really, really fascinating to me. And I think it's well written. The Marriage Act is a fiction book that is mind-blowing. It's set like maybe 30 or 50 years in the future. But the scary thing is like it's all about like AI and how in England, how people are – the Marriage Act is about couples are encouraged to marry. And if they do, they get significant tax breaks and better places to live and all of this stuff. But it's all based on like having AI in your home. And they monitor your conversations. And if they see that you're not having a good relationship, then they can take you to family court and like divorce you.
Wow.
It's just like governmental control through AI. But the scary thing is it's not that far in the future. And the AI technology is like not that far off from what we're currently using.
Sure. Yeah.
Those are some books that I'm like really into right now. But I mean, again, depending on what situation people are in, I could name a million different books.
What would be your starting off into your business world, like what would be a book that kind of shows up if somebody's listening to this and being like, hey, maybe I'm not interested in those books, but what would be something that came in?
The One Thing for Productivity by Gary Keller and Jay Papasan. That's one of my favorites for business. For communication, Fierce Conversations or Crucial Conversations.
Yep.
I think everyone should read both or either one of those books. For leadership, for just kind of general leadership, I think Multipliers by Liz Wiseman is fantastic, as is her second book, Impact Players. While Multipliers speaks a little bit more to the leader, Impact Players speaks a bit more to the employee. But in both cases, it's how you can level up and become better leaders in your respective positions. Those are kind of the ones that immediately come to mind.
I think a couple of business books that really helped me out early on. A lot of people have read this one, but Good to Great was a really,
It
was a pivotal one for me because it was like the difference. It's just such a starking, like good, like it's just all about employees, right? Having really good employees versus having great employees. Having good employees is the most challenging part because having a good employee is you don't really want to let them go because they're good. The problem is they're not bad enough to want to fire, but they're not great enough to get to extraordinary results. And so it just talks about the trap of having really good to great employees.
Good products or good
Process. Mostly good to great, though, related
people.
About people for what that is. From there, I also really enjoy 11 Rings, books like that. Shoe Dog, that are about companies that's transformed, about the reason why I like them, or even like the hard things about hard things, because it tells the story of how difficult building businesses were about and it's coming from a standpoint from each individual's perspective who built the company. Not individually built it, but like who are the owners of the company, if you will, or the CEO of the company, and just the the struggles that happens. I remember reading, mm-hmm. I forget, what was it, Elon Musk book that he wrote a long time ago. You remember what I'm talking about? I remember he called it, and sorry for swearing, but he called it the fucking money matrix. I remember reading that being like, man, it's so true. Like he's like, because he's like, we only had like 3 days left of cash. And he was like, it's the fucking money matrix. And I had to do this different thing. It's just like, that is actually real life. Like that's how it unfolds, right?
I think Steve Jobs' biography was really great for that very
reason.
Yeah,
that's a really good reason. I like those. It was a biography, not auto.
Yeah.
I like those type of books because they share stories and you can relate to them. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if they give you any fundamental like principles, but they give you just this reassurance. And that's kind of my point of using some of those books for people that are listening to this building a business, that reassurance that it is really about never giving up. I know that that's thrown out there so much, but surviving long enough to succeed is part of your business, right? And people forget about that. It's not like every moment's this glamorous thing. It actually becomes the one thing they talk about, mastering the boredom of success, mm-hmm. right? Which is, that's what to me kind of like, you hear these stories and sure there's moments, but if you look at these moments that like, where like Nike went to this or, you know.
But it's also about being able to identify opportunities and being willing to take risk.
Sure. That's all of it. There's no question about that.
I really like I can't remember the Netflix book. I think it's called This Will Never Work by one of the founders of Netflix, but like that same deal, like that one was a great story as well.
You know what? I just have to give them credit for this because it was really early on. The Cash Flow Quadrant by Robert Kiyosaki was really like, that was like probably one of the first books in 2005 I read. Just because it was like, the cash flow quadrant was, I just can remember the graph, right? It's all about like, if you're an employee, you have money here, you know, if you're self-employed here, if you have business, then it's generating air. And the fourth one is just money working for yourself. And it was like I remember if I have like teenagers or college students kind of coming in there, like what's a good book? I always recommend it because it's a very easy way to start conceptualizing like how to like use your money and what to do. And it helps to kind of just helps you in there.
Was that the very first?
Yes. That was like, the first book.
What about like personal development? I guess maybe that's like personal professional development. That's the very first.
Yeah.
The first one I ever read was,
I don't know if it was my first, but it was
pretty
there.
Close. Yeah. The very first one I can remember is Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill.
Yeah. That was actually, you're probably right. That was, you know what? I may have read that. And then I read Psycho Cybernetics.
Oh my
which
God.
Is probably one of the first ones leading into like more of like personal development.
Yes.
Even though it's like, it's just wild. It's a wild book. And then of course, you know, anything that Michael Singer writes is something that I would gift to anybody because I think it makes you a better business person, which is the whole concept of 200% life anyways. And it helped answer questions, my own therapy, if you will, of like, how do you build this business and how do you enjoy all of these fruits of life? And, you know, I say fruits of life, like how do you enjoy playing lacrosse or skiing or taking trips or having things and at the same time be rooted in being and grounding. And I think the 200% life, that's the model is here. It's based on a lot of the teachings from Michael Singer and other sports teachers, but mainly him because he did build a business. He did these different things, but not only for those things. So anything that Michael Singer does a really good job of really living untethered, by the way, too, should be a book that I think I've read that 6 times. Now I just read it last Friday again. I went on a Friday or Saturday. I went on a long bike ride. I took like it was actually funny because I took like a almost 4 hour bike ride and I finished from like 100 yards from my house. It was just
crazy.
So funny. Yeah. It was just from there.
So is that I'm actually just curious now that you're talking about it. Like, I don't know if I've ever reread a book in my life. Maybe like 2 that I can think of that I've actually reread, but you reread Untethered Soul.
Yes.
Is there any other one that you've read multiple times?
Well, yes, there's, and they're mostly spiritual. Well, I've,
Bhagavad Gita.
Bhagavad Gita I've read multiple times, probably 4 or 5 times. Adi Shanti's books I've read multiple times. Living Untethered, I've read probably 6 times. The Untethered Soul or the Surrender Experiment, I've read multiple times.
Yeah.
The one thing I've actually read multiple times too as well. But yeah, if there's any books that I read more, again, and the reason why I do that is because it's kind of like, I always reference this, like Warren Buffett said when he read that book about finance, he went and read it like 20 times. It was Benjamin Graham's book that was like, is what his Bible was that he learned from, his name's Benjamin Graham. And I tried to read that book, by the way, that Warren had read 20 times.
It was called, like, The Investor's
something.
It was, like, this thick.
But it was, like, it was, like, I read, like, three sentences, and I was, like, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you gifted me that book.
Is that what happened?
Yes, you did. It's at my house.
I was, like, I'm not gonna do that anymore. But
I never read it either.
Yeah, it was so difficult. And I was, like, but that was his Bible, and he got it. And for me, it was, like, there was the same thing of, like, these more of these deep spiritual books, because that was more of a quest for me. Than it was, and that's why I just continue to read, and because like you just hear them differently as you're going
wondering.
Through there. Even Living Untethered, when I read, the sixth time last weekend, I got so much more out of it. Like because you hear it deeper, and I hear all those, you know, the people that I listen to say the same thing, right? Their 70s, like, man, I first listened to this line 30 years ago and it made no sense to me. Now I hear it and it makes me cry, or whatever it is, right?
Like, which I suppose in a certain way is like with the actual Bible, when we're talking about like the Christian Bible. Or I guess other ones, but I'm more familiar with the Christian Bible, that, I mean, people do read that every single day.
Yeah.
Like, over and over and over again for their entire life.
Yes, because you hear deeper scriptures.
Right, or you need a different little lesson.
You should actually go read Living Untethered again.
Yeah, so
I've read that once.
I have read Untethered Soul two or three times. Yeah. The second time I listened to it, I definitely was like, oh my God,
You should go listen to
it.
Yes, exactly. And then you get it.
And then
it
I probably
deeper.
Need to get it, like, read it again. But yeah, there's only been like a handful of books I've ever read more than once. And typically it's because I'm looking to get something specific out of it because I want to utilize it in a certain way, or sure. I want to share it or teach it, like Fierce Conversations. But yeah, it's similar to that, like to movies. I can't watch movies more than once.
Movie,
anyway.
Yeah. In movies I don't really.
Well, maybe. I mean, like, I have watched Top Gun multiple times.
Yeah, well, it's a great movie.
I know it is. Okay, so now our listeners have lots of books that
they can go
read. But what I also really wanted to talk about was an interesting email that you shared with, I think, with me and Devin. So maybe this was the same bike ride that you came
it was.
When you were listening to Untethered Soul.
Yeah. Living Untethered.
Living Untethered, so that you came up with these couple of sentences, and can I read them, and then you talk about them. So you said, the ego is happy when who you think you are, the self-identity, is reassured by the world. It works tirelessly for others to see who it is. That's the struggle.
What does it mean to you when you read that?
Well, I'm not sure I understand it. So what I get from it is that our ego wants to be in alignment with the identity that we've created, and that is reflected back to us by the world, that the kind of the world accepts, the outside world accepts. And then our ego is going to continue to work constantly to make sure we uphold that identity that the world is accepting.
Hey, you know what dawned on me?
Is that true?
Yeah, it is. And I'll break that down, but you did a good job. It dawned on me that the ego, by the way, will never stop. It's never, it's always looking for more. And the reason why it's always looking for more is because that's how it's able to maintain its concept. So it's by definition, it has to, because the ego is a self concept that you created. So remember, you are in there, created the ego. Right? It is a natural process, by the way. I say the word natural because it just happens. It happens to all of us. And whether that's at some point in time when we get to this next level of iteration and consciousness that we move past that, I don't know. But right now, go ahead.
I was going to say, can I just get an example from you? So like, you say we create the ego. You've created an ego.
Yes.
What is that? Can you tell me what that is?
Well, the ego is a self-concept.
What's yours?
I don't think anybody really ultimately knows, which is part of the challenge, because it's based on all of your experiences. It's based on all the books that you've read. It's based on people that have taught you things. It's based on things that you've seen. And what it does is it takes pieces of all of that you liked or disliked, and it creates a concept of who it thinks it is based on the minor amount of experiences in the world that you've had. Now, all of a sudden, that's now created. Remember, it's self-concept. So it's something that you allowed to create. And it's almost like a mirage, but it's real inside there.
Yeah, so I guess what I'm asking is, what did you have you created?
Well, I mean, I think everyone's ego is based on the experiences that I've had. So for me, kind of growing up, money was a thing. Power was a thing. you know, I think those are the two main ones, right?
Are ego and identity the same thing?
Yeah, they can all wrapped up in the same thing.
So, like, what's the identity that you've created?
Well, I think the self-concept that I created was, again, that especially early on in my life that I followed was money and power, right, will give you ultimate fulfillment in life.
So I'm just kind of putting your words in your mouth, but I'm just saying, like, you created an identity that I am a person.
I will,
of,
no, the way,
like, what is it?
The way you say it is, like, basically, like, I will feel okay as long as I am in control of power and I have money and the world will somehow bow to me. And again, this is where it comes into that.
And the world accepts that because.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. And the world.
But remember,
like,
our Western society actually perpetuates that too, as well.
Oh, yeah.
It's telling you that. And so that's part of the ego is also the experiences, all those things that I said, also in your, the place you grow up.
Right. And I was going to say, and the world almost like rewards that identity.
Our world does. Remember,
our world, yes.
Go on the Eastern side of the world. It doesn't. They look. They
well,
look
it depends
over,
on where you are well, in the Eastern
you,
world. But yeah.
You know where I'm saying in this context. Yeah. You look back. They look back over here and they go, "What is wrong with these people?" I mean, I'm serious. That's what. And then of course people over here are going, "Why are you sitting in a cave?" Right? Like whatever. It's just they're making things up. But that's the point, right? Of those different things. But the ego of the self, it's you have now created. It's based on all. This is where preference comes in, by the way. So now you're actually getting the root reason. The reason why you this is the fall of the garden, by the way. Was basically you having a preference. And the minute you decide you like something more than you don't like something, you've now created a concept of how you want the world to be. This is where the self-concept comes in. And then it just gets strengthened more and more by creating it, by having more experiences. But the thing is you just watch how fragile it is. Because you could read one book and your entire frame of reference could be changed. Right, you can no longer like something or dislike something. Right, it just moves so quickly. So that's why it's just like a computer that's being programmed. If you program the computer something new, it's going to spit out some more things. So your concept is always evolving as long as if you allow it to run your life. Right, this is where literally in the Third Zen Patriarch, the first line, and a lot of deep teachers talk about this as the most powerful line in spirituality, which is the great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences. Right. And, but it also goes on to say, like, make the slightest distinction and separates the difference between heaven and hell. And that's why preference is the cause of self-concept. So you see this, you first go out there, you have an experience, and then you instantly in there, what you do, right? You go, I like this, or you go, I don't like the way this feels. And so you go, I don't like the way this feels. Instantaneously, you now develop the concept that you don't like that. So therefore, now you're saying, I don't want that feeling to happen. This is where, you know, you can really slow it down and you could say, just take two experiences. If you've never had any other experiences out there in your life, you could go, oh, I had this butterfly came and land on me. What a magical experience. Because that butterfly, by the way, has a vibrational code to it that you feel and experience inside. That vibrational code goes, and you go, oh, I love butterflies. 2 seconds later, you look over and there's a snake and it's rattling. And that has a different vibrational code to it, doesn't it? And you feel, and you go, I don't like the snake, right? So now all of a sudden, from two experiences, you go, I like butterflies, especially when they land on me, and I don't like anything with snakes. And so now all of a sudden, the mind starts going, well, shit, anything that looks like a snake, I'm going to stay away from, and I got to go find more butterflies. That is 1 second or 5 seconds of your life. Imagine now you're 40 years old. How many experiences have you had that you've said, I like or dislike, without even knowing it? That's how you've created this self-concept.
Okay, so those examples are all those little things that come to form your identity.
Yes.
Yeah, sometimes I guess I think identity is more of like you have more choice or like you choose it.
Well, you ultimately do, okay. but the reason why I say it's a natural process because before you're really aware that you're aware, you're already doing this. You see this with kids. I like this, I don't like this, and they're already developing their ego. Like because now they like certain things and dislike certain things. Now it's already created. You take a year of that and there's already self-concept. You take 40 years of this. I mean, think about how deep this thing is. It's like I've heard the analogy, and you can go, jump in, but I've heard this analogy. It's like, it's literally like the ego itself is like, picture like the size of Vermont state spider web that has spun up all different angles. And it's like, try to unspin it. It's like, that's why when a moment happens, and I think I might have shared this in one of the last podcasts, but when a moment happens and there's 10 people in the room, the moment hits each one of us differently.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Because of our own individual self-concepts or webs that we've had of some people may have liked it. Some people might have been, I'm okay with it. Some people may have hated it.
Right.
But it's only because...
Or it contradicts their self-concept or identity, and it makes them... Yeah.
So it's not never about the moment.
Right.
It's the moment is illuminating what's within you that needs to be unspun, meaning it needs to be released. And that's why all of this work that we do here on Earth is about releasing this karmic seeds, if you want to use that word karma, right? Of releasing those likes and dislikes, these preferences. Which, by the way, there's another famous person called the Buddha who went out there and said, I figured it all out after 5 years of leaving. The cause of all suffering, all of life is suffering. And then the second word he basically said was, the cause of all suffering is desire, which is really just another word for preference. People hear desire in our side to go, well, I'm not lust, right? I'm not going after desire. He just meant preferences, likes and dislikes.
Mm-hmm.
It's literally, I mean, we've been talking about it for 20 minutes and he summed it up in three words, basically. I don't know how many words there are, but the cause of all suffering is desire, is preference. Like, again, these breadcrumbs of people been leaving for thousands of years, right? Of stop creating these preferences. The preferences is what causes all the garbage that's inside. And I say the word garbage, but all the garbage or the blockage that happens from all the preferences is why you're not feeling life. And then all of a sudden you go, well, I've got all this garbage in here. So therefore I'm going to go try to rearrange the world outside. So this, when the moment happens, it hits my stuff, the self-concept, the way I want it to. And that's what makes you feel better. Do you see how all this is put together? And this is why when I use that example of when the moment happens, it hits your stuff. So what you want to do is you want to go out there and try to change the moment so that the stuff inside feels okay. That is literally like, I have a stomach ache constantly every day, and I'm gonna go continue to take Advil every day instead of actually stop eating the food that's causing the stomach ache. Well, I'm just gonna go out there and take Advil every day. I don't care what it does, what ramifications it does for me, instead of actually solving the root problem. The root problem here is the minute you no longer have a preference, and that's a big one for people to unpack, but the minute you no longer need the world to be a certain way, you're totally in absolute freedom. And that's the starting position that we do. And now you have all this work to do to unwind all of these things that you've stored from your patterns. And then all of a sudden, when the moment happens outside, you're totally cool. I mean, like, again, like, it doesn't mean you don't deal with the situation. It doesn't mean you don't have goals or do any of those things. It just means the moment can do what the moment's going to do. And if it feels, if you get in there and hit for a moment, you let it go. You surrender to it, and then you act with clear conscience.
So can you relate? Tell me how all that, because yes, that's all true. At least I think it's true. How does that relate back to what you were talking about originally, which is the
So the ego is ego. Happy, right? The ego is happy when you think you are, when who you think you are, the self-identity is reassured by the world. Because what the ego is trying to do is trying to make you feel okay. So it wants the moment outside to reassure you, which then makes you feel better.
Well, it wants to... correct me if I'm wrong, but it wants to match the identity that you've created.
Yeah, the reason why it wants to match the identity is because when it matches, you feel
better. It feels
better.
Yeah.
You have this inner experience and you go, I like it. If somebody came up to you and be like, man, Hallie, you're the best chief of staff in the world. And they just start giving you all of a sudden you're matching it. You see something online posted about how great you are. You instantly feel better about that. Like, because now your ego or your self-concept is matched, right? And all of a sudden you're being rewarded by the world of saying, oh, you do this. And you're going, yeah. And you feel uplifted. And there's nothing wrong with getting the accolade. My point is, though, is why would you want to wait till the world happens a certain way to feel that? And that has been the whole truth of like finding the spirituality question for me, which is I don't want the world to have to be a certain way for me to feel that. And so I'm going to go do the inner work that's required to feel that way permanently, and whatever happens with the outer world is whatever happens with the outer world.
So I saw this thing there's this guy I follow on Instagram, and I generally like his content, but he said something interesting recently. He said he actually had stopped doing a lot of videos, and he was like, I'm having a hard time like hearing my own voice, even like I don't want to see videos of myself and whatever. And it's because he said why. It's because he went to, I think it was Peru, and did a whole like spiritual cleansing thing. And he said the whole point of it was he experienced an ego death during it. And so now he's back in the States and back with his family and whatever. And he was like, I'm having a very hard time. Like, I don't maybe he meant like he didn't want to put himself out there so much, or because maybe previously it was a different part of him doing it than it is now. But like, what is this ego death? And do you need to go to Peru in order to have it?
Well, I don't know that the actual experience of who you're referring to, but when I die daily, or the death of the ego basically means the self-concept that's there is gone. So you kind of wake up and can truly experience the world, and you see yourself completely differently.
So right? That must be okay.
So remember, when you are attached to the ego, which 99% of the world is, and they're attached to it, you only see life through ego. So you see it through basically the self-concept that you created. So that's how you see life, and that's how you experience it. The minute that is gone, you see just tree, right? That's the whole Buddhist concept of I've been walking by that tree the entire time, and now all of a sudden I walk out there and you just see a tree. It's the wildest experience. You're not seeing a bird for what it is. You're not seeing another human for being the role that you play, or some fit in the box concept of that person you think you are. You just see another human. Just like you would see a flower that has multiple colors and flowers, you go out there and see the world the same way. And so you just know, you're not bringing your garbage into the world. That's why, and when Michael, and Oprah's favorite line in Michael's book was, the moment in front of you is not bothering you, you're bothering yourself about the moment. There's nothing wrong with the moment at all. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying it's morally right. I'm not saying it's morally wrong. I'm not saying it's right or unjust or justice. I'm just saying the moment's happening could give two shits of whether or not you like it or not. Mm-hmm. It's just happening for you to do. It's for you to illuminate the work or to experience the moment. And there's nothing wrong with just experiencing the moment. And so my guess, though, when I hear that a little bit, I wonder if he's kind of starting to go through that loop circle again, where he's on the lower side of that circle.
That's what I was wondering
too. Which is actually it's moved. He probably had this awakening experience, but the ego will jump back in there after you've had
an
awakening experience.
It's like that resisting and like wanting to retreat.
It's renouncing.
Renouncing, yeah.
Which is why a lot of spiritual teachers, like, it's not about renouncing, because what happens is one of the first phases when you have an awakening, which is an awakening experience. It doesn't mean the death is totally happening. I don't know in this case, but most people, they lose a part of their ego, but it shapeshifts and tries to become a spiritual person, or tries to prevent you from not doing any of those things. Mm-hmm. And takes you down a different path. And it's only doing that to get your control. It doesn't care whether or not you're famous or a serial killer. It doesn't matter. It just wants its control. And so it'll do whatever it can to do that. Adi Shanti talks about this a lot, right? He talked about when he had this kind of annihilation of the ego, this really large awakening in his life. Mm-hmm. His teacher came to him and said, be careful of basically what we just said. And he's like, it's not going to happen to me. And it did 6 years. He went off and just did everything. And he's like, he came back after 6 years and was, everything she said came true. And it's really what that circle is. Like, you have this awakening, you think you're awakened, but you're more awake than you were before.
Right.
But you then have fallen into this new trap of the ego grabbing you in a whole other way. And for him, 6 years later, then he had this whole other, and that's when he saw the totality of it. And when people ask him, they said, you know, do you, I think the way Tammy Simon asked him this question in an interview, they said, do you think you'll be conscious, you know, the rest of your life, or some form of question like that? And he's like, I only know the moment that I'm in. I don't know if I'm ever going to be Velcroed again. I can't tell you that. I can only tell you that in this moment right now, I'm not Velcroed. Mm. And I think that's the appropriate answer, right? Because it's the only thing, if you're not, you're just using your mind to do that. So I think, yeah, it's a really interesting, but the death of the ego is like, that's why the Bible talks about this. I die daily. I mean, I think St. Paul said that. That's the whole point of that basically is, you know, is when you do that, when you die daily, you're having a slow death of the ego every day. When you have a spiritual fracture, is like Eckhart Tolle is a great example of that, or maybe this is a larger case of this, or I even heard it in TM. I've heard people have this as well. It's hard to function in society again because everything you thought you were broke, mm-hmm. and it's fractured. So now all of a sudden you're trying to put it back together, and you don't know how to actually operate in the world because you feel this inner joy. But at the same time, you're at this pull, like nothing makes sense because this whole spiritual fracture. That's why the natural process to slim away this is to actually allow it to happen every day. You're just taking a percent every day or a half percent, and you're just releasing it and letting it go to slowly. Now, it's like, I always use the example in business. It's no difference to, like, if all of a sudden, when I first started a business, I borrowed $8,000, right? If somebody were to give me $1 million, I would have wastefully spent it. And not had the financial stewardship to basically be a good steward of capital. Now it's different, right? Because money means something. It's different zeros, different dollar places, just like people that win the lottery end up being in a worse off situation within 5 years because they can't handle it. Mm-hmm. It's no difference. Like when you get a big influx of energy or you break of what that looks like. What was I going to say? Gangaji, who I know I played some stuff for you before. Yeah. She's not very mainstream in terms of the U.S. She's actually pretty mainstream outside of it. But anyways, yeah. Her teacher, Babaji is her teacher. And she's talked about her an experience when she was sitting in the room and she uses the analogy. It was like as if my entire life was built up on this platform. And in one moment, the platform completely crashed and I saw it crash. And that was the removal of any type of concept that I had about myself anymore. And then it put me front and center to experience life.
The fracture thing doesn't happen to everybody, though.
No, it doesn't.
Okay.
It doesn't at all. And that's why when Eckhart Tolle had that spiritual fracture, he literally ended up in a park bench for like 3 years.
Right.
Because he couldn't figure out how to handle himself in society.
Is it more common what Gangaji was talking about?
It's more common to slowly, like I think, you know, right now we're in this phase of a lot more people are just becoming more awake. I'm not going to use the word enlightened. They're just becoming more awake.
Yes.
You, me, everyone that's listening to this is more awake.
Right.
Like, because every moment, it doesn't mean you're enlightened. It just means you're becoming more awake and you're realizing, maybe there's more to life than this. Maybe I do have this ego. Maybe I am being kind of run by it, right? You just start becoming face to face with some truths. You're not there yet, but you're now having awareness around that. That is changing the totality of the world's energy. As that starts to shift, it makes all of this faster, by the way. It's like the more water you have flowing in a river, the easier it is to go faster down the stream. It's the same, the more energy cohesiveness that you have pulls out all of this together. And you feel this, you've done group meditations with TM. Mm-hmm. How much stronger is that pull, by the way? Right? It's a deeper sense when you get into group meditation. So imagine if the whole world is just one degree getting better or more awakened, right, to that point and bringing that. That's what you're starting to see, this shift in energy field.
Can I keep going?
Yeah.
Okay. So actually, when you're talking about the awakening thing, it reminded me of something, and I do wonder if this has to do with the ego. So you know how people talk a lot about having these midlife crises?
Yep.
However, more recently, I've been probably in the past few weeks, I've actually heard different language around that, which I really like, which people are calling it a midlife awakening, which I think is really fascinating. Yeah. But I wonder if the crisis part comes from either feeling like you had a certain amount of success, but something's still missing, or you haven't achieved what you thought you were going to achieve by midlife, and so it's causing issues. I don't know. I haven't gotten there quite yet. But anyway, my point being, is the midlife crisis ego-based or ego-driven? And then how can we help other people reframe it so it does become more of like this midlife awakening, which I think is a way better explanation and it makes it more positive.
Yeah. I mean, whatever word works for you, I think crisis or awakening is softer, and maybe grabs more people. I think ultimately what ends up happening though, is you get to a period of your life and maybe it happens to be halfway through there. And that's kind of the concept. And you realize, like, is this all life's supposed to be? Is this really it? Like, you just start asking the fundamental truths of life. Like, why am I here? You may not say it that way, but that's what starts to dawn on you. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, like, what is this all about? Right? Again, I can throw different forms of the question out there, but that starts to happen. But here's where the ego shows up. So I think it's a really wonderful truth that starts to show up. Again, whether people had success or didn't have success, I think it still shows up the same way. And people go like, is this all there is? Like, what is this? What is the point of all of this? What am I doing here?
Right.
That's the question that starts to ask. Then the ego goes, go buy a car. And if you buy a car, you will feel better. That's where you see the action motivated from the ego come from.
Right.
The question actually is a deep part of the truth though. And the ego instantly recognizes the fact that it can be its own death if you decide to go down there. And it goes, no, this, you're absolutely right. And it's basically doing this. And it's like, well, I know what's going to make you happy, Hallie. If you just go do this, like you could quit your job, go get a divorce.
I was going to say get a divorce,
You start going over here. If you move to Hawaii or move to Florida, this is going to do it all. And you get all excited about it. And you feel better. And it keeps you away from going to those questions, which is really the annihilation. If you go down those questions long enough, it's annihilation of the ego.
Mm-hmm. And maybe it does move towards that.
Awakening. Yeah. And if you keep that path of that question, that's what starts to happen. You hold the line of that North Star of like, who am I? Like, where am I going? What's the point of this? It starts to slowly evaporate parts of the ego. And that's why it doesn't want you to. So that's when it goes, yeah, it's not it. Like, yeah, you actually almost agrees. You go, yeah, it's not right. But I tell you what, you should probably live in Florida. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just made up what it, but it's all of those things, all the things yeah. that people do. I should go buy a
Harley. Try to change something external.
Yes, try to change something externally. That's the 200% life. So when that shows up and this awakening starts to show up and you start having these deeper questions, one, just find like a conversation like this and whoever's talking about this and listen to it all the time because you need this awareness constantly, right? And then just keep asking the question like, oh, you know, is moving to Florida really going to make me happy? And you're not, don't ask it and looking for the answer from the mind because the mind will put a dress rehearsal on for you to experience and you'll go, yeah, this would feel better.
That's, it's not even
why
about-
people, but this is why people struggle with decisions. It's why everyone struggles with decisions. It's because they're not struggling with a decision. They're struggling with which to see which part, which decision is going to make them feel better.
Yeah. So even in that example, it made me think, well, maybe it's, the question is not whether or not is it going to make me happy? Because the answer is, of course, it's going to be yes.
Yeah.
But the question maybe is something different, like...
Why am I not happy already?
Yeah, or is moving to Florida going to change how I feel inside? Or, you know, something well, that's
I think
significantly...
The deeper question is, is like, I thank you for bringing that up. I think the way I always, the way this goes on in my own mind is I go, this is not going to make me happier. The whatever I'm about to be outside, it's like, this is not going to make me happier. Do I still want to do it?
Right. Because
there's
nothing.
You've
got to change the question.
Yes, you have to change. Like, it's an internal step, which is, and then you go, like, well, why would I need this to be happy? And this literally goes on in my head, like, oh, you little silly little guy up there. Like, I literally talk to him that way. Yeah. Like, he calls him Mickey, whatever he is. It's like, it's so funny. Like, why would you want me to go do that? Like, that's just so interesting. And then it kind of just, then it just floats away and it stops grabbing you and you just get these larger separations.
But if it does keep coming up in
different
ways,
you
may find yourself moving in that direction, but it's not so much from the mind.
You'll just find yourself moving in that direction. You'll just, again, that's the Tao. Like, again, when you get clear, when you stop using the personal mind to dictate life, you actually become more in line with life. This is why people still struggle. Like, I still need to find my passion. What they're really saying is I want, there's this deep sense of me knowing that I should be doing something in my life that I'm not really doing because it's not congruent with who your nature is, because it's not. You're doing it congruent with who your ego is instead of the nature. The minute you start releasing the ego, you actually fall in line with the Tao, the middle way. This is why people wrote about it thousands of years ago. And they're saying, get out of that and you'll find your middle way with action, with no action. And you just find yourself there moving through life. And it becomes way better experience. You become better at everything you do. Mother, father, sibling, brother, sister, I guess that's sibling. But, you know, business owner, the roles you play in during business, the sports you play, everything. That you want to learn something, you can learn it faster. You can comprehend books better, whatever level you are. You just, everything gets more refined because you're no longer doing it with all this pent up energy for other ulterior motives. Again, so when people say like, what is the ultimate truth? Everything we said points to the truth, and that's what everyone's trying to point to. And when you finally realize that, you just surrender. That's the easiest word to use. And when you know thyself, you don't need to do anything else exterior to actually turn that on.
Hey everybody, before you go, Helen and I wanted to ask you for a favor. As business owners, you understand that reviews and testimonials are an essential part of growing your business and reaching new audiences. Well, from two business owners to another, we would be incredibly grateful if you could support us by leaving a review. It does really help us get the podcast in the hands of other conscious business owners. So thank you.